Welcome, everybody, to Parshas Bamidbar. As we begin Sefer Bamidbar, 5768, today is the 40th day of the Omer, so that means we have this Shabbos and next Shabbos, and Sunday evening, please God, we will be ushering in Shavuos, the 50th day. And we are trying to keep track with the Parsha, with teachings from Mesilas Yesharim, and with the important task of preparing spiritually for receiving of the Torah. So let's begin with Mesilas Yesharim. We have tried to select one of the virtues every week in order, focus on that, and then tie it into the Parsha, and then come out with a message for preparing for Kabbalah Satorah. We're going to start with the Mesilas Yesharim first, and then move to the Parsha. The virtue this week would be the virtue of purity. Purity is in chapter 16, beginning with page 105. Rabbi Luzzatto starts off that purity, what does purity mean? Purity entails corrective measures aimed at the refinement of one's heart and thoughts. Purity relates not to deed, but to thought. I would like to first read a short excerpt from the introduction, page 6, and then come back to 105, because I think there is a very succinct kind of definition of purity of thought. On page 6, he's showing how you can have multiple divisions of service of God. He shows how in the Torah, they are divided up into different components. In the Sefer, it's going to be divided up into different components. So one of those verses that he quotes is a verse from Dvarim, and there is a phrase there that says, let me read you the verse. The verse is Dvarim chapter 10, verses 12 and 13. Va'ata Yisrael, now Israel, it should be a familiar verse, we have quoted it before. Mo Hashem Elokecha Shoel Me'imach, what does the Eternal your God request of you? Kiim, only liyira es Hashem Elokecha, to fear the Eternal your God, v'leches b'chol drachav, to follow all his ways, uli ahavoso, and to love him, v'lavod es Hashem Elokecha, and to serve the Eternal your God, v'chol levavcha u'v'chol nafshecha, with all your heart and your entire being, lishmor es mitzvos Hashem v'es chukosav, and to keep the Eternal's commandments and statutes. The purpose of quoting this, he continues, here Moshe incorporated all the elements, or all the components, that are necessary for the perfection of that service that is desired by the Holy One, blessed be He, fear of the Eternal, walking in His ways, love of the Eternal, perfecting the heart, and observance of all the mitzvahs. Thus we have also the task divided up into different components. He uses that as a basis for creating a system for the book, which will also be the task divided up into different components. But what's relevant to our discussion of purity today is that this phrase, b'chol levavcha, with all your heart, which he coins the phrase shleimus halev, perfecting the heart, which I think ultimately is going to be the same thing as our system, Tahara. What does he say about perfecting the heart as he focuses on that? Perfecting the heart so that the service before the Blessed One should be carried out with pure intent for the purpose of serving Him only with no other motives. This means that one's heart should be totally devoted to the divine service, not like the one who lacks commitment or acts out of habit. Rather, one's whole heart should aspire to this. I see in this paragraph three elements of perfecting the heart. Element number one, motive. The motive is pure. There are no ulterior motives. I don't have a hidden agenda. Number two, I'm not like one who lacks commitment. I'm wholehearted in the sense that I'm totally committed. I'm not wishy-washy. Number three, I serve with my heart. I don't just act out of habit. Those are three important, distinct ideas. One is motive, one is total commitment, and one is being present and having your heart in what you're doing, not just acting by rote. So these are some of the elements that we're discussing today, purity. Back to the chapter on purity, he develops this a little more. The idiom of purity, a pure heart, was used by David, who said in Tehillim, "Create for me, O God, a pure heart." Lev tahor barali alokim. That's quoted in the High Holidays davening. You know what? The second half of that verse is, "Al tashlicheni milfanecha." I'm not sure if the first one is. I'm not sure if Lev tahor is, but in the song, it's got, you know, we always sing, "Al tashlicheni," but the first part is, "Lev tahor berali elokim." So that's this verse here. The purpose of this virtue is that a person should prevent the evil inclination from influencing his actions. All of his actions should be permeated with knowledge and fear of the eternal, and should be free of sin and lustful desire. So the actions should be with pure intent. Now, which actions are we talking about? Are we talking about the actions of the mitzvahs or the other actions? The actions that are not the mitzvahs. And Rabbi Lutzata says both. There's purity relevant to action that involves physical and material needs. And we've already discussed abstinence, which means that we've already assumed that we've already limited our physical actions to what is essential, not what is not essential. That's already a step even before purity. This is saying, and in those physical actions that we're doing that are essential, we do them with purity. Even if one conducts himself with abstinence, taking from the world no more than what is essential, he must still purify his heart and thought, so that the little that he does take should have nothing to do with pleasure and desire. This is a high level. Rather, the intent of his action should be directed toward the good that will emerge from this deed. And it should be bound to knowledge and the service of the eternal. It means transforming the act, even the act that we're doing, that is necessary to be done, doing it with a pure intent. I'll give you some examples. These are examples that I've thought about for myself, because I learned one thing. Let me tell you this. You can go through this book and you can practice every virtue a little bit. It's not all or nothing. I learned this from Rabbi Friedlander himself, personally. I heard him say this in a little group. And so you have heard ideas, you have heard thoughts that are pulled out from various different levels or various different virtues from this book. It's not hypocritical to be talking about purity when we're still working on vigilance. So this is something that people talk about, think about. Okay, when I'm eating, am I eating just the enjoyment of the food? Gastronomical pleasure. So purity says, I've got no problem with you eating. You got to eat. But pure eating would be, I'm eating to be healthy. I'm eating to be strong and energetic so that I can work, so that I can function. I thought of some other things. You know, when I eat with my family, we spend time together. If not for eating, we wouldn't have that family time. That's a great opportunity. It gives me a sense of well-being. It makes me cheerful. Takes away the grumps. So these are good things. These are pure motives for eating. Oh, it happens to be that it is very pleasurable. I do enjoy eating. But when I feel that pleasure, I make a bracha, and I acknowledge God who created this pleasure. So even the pleasure is purposeful, purified, transformed. So this is an example of purity. So you can just eat, or you could eat with good thoughts. Same thing with sleeping. You could sleep to luxuriate, or to turn off, disconnect, escape. You could sleep to be healthy, to be strong, energetic, etc., and all those kind of things. everything, every physical mundane action can be done with purity. So that's one aspect of purity. At the same time, one should be aware that just as it is possible for purity of thought to influence corporal acts that naturally attract the evil inclination, distancing them from it, thereby preventing them from being possessed by it, so the purity makes these actions from evil into good. But it also is possible for purity of thought to influence deeds that are oriented towards the Creator. In other words, you can do a holy act with purity or lacking purity. This will prevent what is often referred to by our rabbis of blessed memory as the performance of a mitzvah not for its own sake, but for ulterior motives. Example, I'm studying Torah. Okay, now everybody here is studying Torah for the right reasons, which is to know God, to become more knowledgeable, to become more closer to Judaism, to closer to observance. But another person could say, I'm studying Torah so that I'll be respected, that I'll become an authority, and then I can make decisions, and I don't have to be told what to do, I'll decide. Or like Tevye saying, if I were rich, I'd have the time that I lack to sit in the synagogue and pray. I would discuss the learned books, maybe have a seat on the Eastern Wall. There can be all kinds of ulterior motives, even when doing the holy. Rai and I were talking a little bit last time about doing a mitzvah, agricultural mitzvahs. We were talking about the Shemitah 2 weeks ago, because it will benefit my field. My field will produce better if I don't plant on it for a year. That would be doing the mitzvah for the wrong reason. I'm doing it because commandment from God to surrender my possession. Any mitzvah could be done with purer motives or less pure motives. So purity encompasses all of this. Purity of thought, of intent, whether it is a physical act, a non-mitzvah act, or whether it be a mitzvah act. The common denominator is, as the sages tell us, Kol ma'asecha yihyu l'shem shamayim. Ultimately, all of your deeds should be done for the sake of heaven. And Rabbi Luzzatto writes that the real area of work in this regard is not the, you know, very few people are all one or all the other, like 100% impure or 100% pure. It's always the mixture. And so the area of perfection that would be discussed in this level would be to purify, to go from 60% pure to 80% pure, or in the case of ivory, soap, 99 1/44% pure. All right. I would say that when we deal with the element of l'shem shamayim, for the sake of heaven, we are dealing in the realm of thought. In other words, let me try to make a salient point here that we're going to take with us in our discussion. Physical actions are very finite and very concrete and very separate. Physical things are separate. Here's a can, here's another can, it's over there. There's the cups, there's the chair. In the physical realm, everything is separate. We do so many different actions, each one is separate. What we're learning is that we have to unify them. We have to make them all, instead of just separate, haphazard actions, they have to have a common purpose. And that can only happen in the mind, in the heart, in the less physical levels of existence. Right? A physical act by itself, taking out any spirituality, is fragmented and distinct. What combines it is in the heart and in the kavana. We're going to develop this, God willing, a little more. I want to share with you a beautiful piece from Rabbi Akiva Tatz in World Mask, which is the current book that I'm studying. Each one of his books I have found completely enlightening and enriching. You know, he speaks about deep concepts, but he writes them in a contemporary way. So he speaks, if I could elaborate on this a little bit, also chapter 16. The chapter is called Reward in This World, which is what we spoke about last week, by the way. That real reward for mitzvos are not in this world, they are in the world to come. And yet, we perform the mitzvos here in this world. This world is finite. The next world is infinite. This world is physical, the next world is not physical. The main focus of his writing is, why does the intent with which we do a mitzvah make such a difference? Why does it really matter what your kavana is? Isn't it all about doing the deed? Isn't a mitzvah really an action? It is remarkable that almost all of the mitzvos consist of physical actions. Only a very few are performed by thought or attitude alone. This means that the mitzvos function by performance of physical actions, which activate effect in the spiritual realm. The action takes place here. The result occurs there. There is no reward here because the reward for a mitzvah is the mitzvah itself. The reward consists of the effect brought about by that mitzvah, which is experienced by the neshama in the next world. The change, the growth, which takes place in the neshama of the person who performs that mitzvah, is the reward itself. Bonding between this world and the next is effected by mitzvos. The body performs the mitzvah, the neshama experiences the result. Let us look more deeply. Okay, I know it's a little bit deep stuff here. But here I think is a little bit better. When the body is engaged in performing a mitzvah, the mind should be focused appropriately. The body must perform its work in physicality, while the mind transcends the physical, so that the result is the translation of material into spiritual. If the intention of the one performing the mitzvah is, in fact, to perform a spiritual act, an act of divine service, then the physical action is elevated to the level of spirit, and the bond between material and spiritual has been forged. If, however, the intention is not transcendent at all, if a person does an action of a mitzvah without thinking about it, or thinking that it's going to serve some purpose of his own, the mitzvah lives in this world only. It didn't transcend. The send button wasn't pushed to transfer it to the spiritual world. The rule in the spiritual world is that all things must be paid in kind. A purely physical action can have only physical results. An action propelled into transcendence by that component of the human which is in fact transcendent, which is that? Which part of the human is transcendent? His mind, his heart, his soul. So, if the action is propelled by that mind, then the action will live in the higher world. This is the reason that kavana, intention, is so important when performing mitzvos. One should be sure to intend that the action of the mitzvah is being done because it's a mitzvah. Because Hashem has commanded this action. Not because I wanted to do it for my own reasons, and not without thinking anything, just acting mindlessly. I'm adding that. To be sure, even a mitzvah performed with inferior motives may be valid. We don't discount any mitzvah. We are happy when anybody does any mitzvah, almost for any motive. If it meets the minimum halachic requirements for that mitzvah, there will be eternal effect. If somebody hands you a lulav and an esrog on Sukkot, don't say, but I don't understand it and I don't know what it means. Just take it and go like this and say, thank you, I just did a mitzvah. The Mesilas Yesharim states that Hashem pays for even the most inferior mitzvos, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu Eino Mekapeach Tzchar Kol Birya. The Holy One, blessed is He, does not withhold the reward of any creature. Even if a person performs a mitzvah primarily because of some ulterior motive, let's say a person gives tzedakah in order to get credit, to be admired, for example, there is no doubt that reward will be paid for that mitzvah if the giver is at least partially intending to do a mitzvah. It's not all or nothing over here. However, how vital will that mitzvah be? It will be as vital in the next world as the intention made it. As spiritual as the mind transformed the physical action, that's how great the benefit will be. Is this making a little bit of sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So So when we people say, well, kavana doesn't matter, it's the action, what they mean is, you'll get some credit. You'll get partial credit. It's not as if you don't have kavana, you won't get credit. That's what it means. It does not mean that it doesn't make a difference. It makes a big difference. Now, the kavana only helps if you do the mitzvah. The kavana doesn't help if you don't do the mitzvah. You know, but I had the thoughts about the mitzvah. I thought about what the mitzvah means. I conjured it up in my mind, or I even bypassed the mitzvah and I went straight to God and I was communing with Him and I had all the kavanas and I was meditating. That doesn't work either, because you connect to God through the mitzvahs that He prescribes. That's another discussion that we've had many times before. But now we're emphasizing the other aspect. The kavana does matter. He says an incredible insight. You know, the famous question that everybody talks about and everybody thinks about is, why do the righteous suffer and why do the wicked prosper? So one of the answers is, the righteous suffer in this world, so they get paid for their sins in this world, and when they get to the next world, they're all paid up, only reward. The wicked, they get rewarded in this world, because they also have some mitzvahs. But when they get to the next world, they've gotten paid up for all their good deeds, now they're just going to suffer. So yes, that's not fair. Rewards for mitzvahs shouldn't be given in this world. They should be given in the next world. What kind of a consolation prize is that for the wicked? If they really did mitzvahs, they should get rewarded in the next world for the mitzvahs, not in this world. You know what the answer is? According to what he said, they get rewarded for their mitzvahs in whatever realm they perform the mitzvahs. If they perform the mitzvah for a this worldly motive, they'll get paid in this world. They did their mitzvahs. Yes, they did their mitzvahs, and Hashem does not hold back the reward. But if their mitzvah was nothing other than a mindless act or an ulterior motive-based act, then they only created a physical mitzvah. They did not make it a spiritual mitzvah. And therefore, there is no reward in the next world for those mitzvahs.
What's an example of that?
An example is that the only mitzvahs they did was for respect, admiration. So they're going to have a nice life. I'm just saying, you know, hypothetically, they will be rich, they will be well respected, and we will say, well, they're so wicked. Yes, but they did mitzvahs. So their mitzvah will be paid back in kind. Since their mitzvahs were done for respect in this world, they will get the reward that they invested in that mitzvah. So not only do the wicked quantitatively have fewer mitzvahs to reward, but qualitatively, they're more earthy rather than spiritual. All right. A lot of spiritual kind of stuff there. So, back to our point. The spiritual quality of a mitzvah, therefore, is created by the spiritual components of the human being, the mind and in the heart. And that's where tahara lives, purity, and that is why it's so important. Okay, our parsha. This is the hard part for me to make the connection, but I think that it's true. In this parsha, we learn almost nothing other than the order of the Jewish camp. Almost nothing other than that. There's a census. The tribal leaders are identified. The tribes are counted. They're each given their placement in the formation of the camp. In other words, there's going to be the Mishkan here. There are going to be three tribes on one side, three on the other, three on the other, three on the other. The Levites will be kind of the inner circle. The Levites are also counted. Each Levite family is given a task in how to carry the Mishkan when they travel. That's it. That is basically the whole parsha. It's all administration. It's all paperwork, so to speak. Formation, order. Kind of boring. We have had some very inspiring topics on parshas by Midbar, however. But I'd like to comment that if this is in the Torah, it's not just, the Torah is not telling us this because it's efficient or because it helps us travel. The Torah would not be giving us systems, how to make the traveling more organized in a functional type of way. The Torah wouldn't be telling us that. The Torah is telling us what reality is. Reality is that the Jewish people are exactly spiritually this camp. There is a Mishkan, which is the home of God. Inside of it is the Torah. It is surrounded by the holiest people, the Kohanim and the Levim, and they are surrounded in turn by different tribes. Our lives revolve around God's presence. It revolves around the Torah. We are different kinds of people. We do stem from different kinds of families and have different kinds of strengths and talents. And yet we are unified. Pamidbar provides the true picture of the Jewish people, its purpose and its relationship to that purpose and to all the other parts. Pamidbar is painting our portrait. This is the portrait of the Jewish people in its purest sense. It's telling us who we are. It's a mirror, if you will. Looking at Parshas Pamidbar is looking in the mirror who we are. The strongest image that comes up on this mirror is an image of unity, unification. Because God is in the center, we all rally around God, and that's what unifies us. Hashem, His Torah, our whole lives. We are interconnected because we are all part of this unified picture. The Midbar is the Parsha of unification. Unification can only reside in the mind and in this heart. In a physical realm, there is no unification. As we said before, physical things are not united. They're separate. They're fragmented. One object is not attached to another object. One person is not connected with another person. We have nothing to do with each other. You're you, he's he, she's she, I'm me. We are not unified. Unification only occurs in the spiritual realm, the mind, the heart, the kavana. Kavana is where unity is created. You see the connection now? Our parsha is the parsha of true unification. Unification can only exist in kavana, in intent, in thought, in motive. If we divorce our kavana, there's no unity, there's no unification. Kabbalah HaTorah. What was the event of standing before Mount Sinai? It was the revelation of our unification. Kabbalah HaTorah was the big blast of this parsha. This parsha is the continuation, the ongoing format, but it really occurred on Mount Sinai, when God was truly in the center. The Ramban says that the Mishkan is just a reenactment or the ongoing reenactment of the giving of the Torah. We were all around the mountain. God was in the center. He gave us His Torah. He revealed. What did He reveal? He didn't just reveal a book of laws. He revealed unification. He revealed Achdus. Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. God is one. God is the cause, the source, the reason, the purpose of our existence. That is what was revealed at Mount Sinai. Achdus. Famous words. Vayichan Shom Yisrael Neged Hahar. The nation encamped by the mountain. In the singular form, by Yichan, and the sages say, it was like one man with one heart. That's because unification was revealed. Because God revealed Himself right in the center, and we discovered that we were unified. Where does unification continue to live on? Not in the physical realm of the world, in the spiritual, in the emotional, in the mind, in the heart. in the spiritual realm, that's where the connection is made. And so, I believe that there is a point of contact between the Parsha, between receiving the Torah at Shavuos, the Parsha just being, as Ramban says, we are given a formation of a camp that allows us to remain in the same format to continue to relive the giving of the Torah. And the way to practice that and perpetuate that whenever and wherever we are is to take our living, both our physical living and our spiritual living, into the realm of kavana, into the realm of mind and thought. We can transform our physical acts into spiritual realities. We can, with our mind, create achdus. You want to have achdus with another person or a group, you do it by your attitude. You decide in your mind whether we are connected or whether we're not connected. If I love my fellow Jew, that's a decision that I make in my mind and in my heart. Communal achdus, etc. The achdus of our actions, connecting ourselves with God by our kavana, it all takes place in the realm of the mind of the heart, in tahara. So, to walk away and say Judaism is about actions, of course we have to do actions. If we don't do actions, if we don't follow the physical prescription, we're not connecting our physical selves to the spiritual. But the actions themselves, that's where we start. You start with the actions. Na'aseh v'nishma, we said at Mount Sinai. We will do and then we will understand. We start with the actions. But as we continue to grow and walk down the Mesilas Yesharim, the path, we realize that we have to take it to the next step, to the level of thought and purity of thought and kavana, and that's where the achdus is forged stronger and stronger. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to torahmediaatlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.